Hey everybody, Carl Stern here. Thank you very much for joining me here on the Dragon King Carl Classic Wrestling Audio Show. Now, I'm going to be doing something special for the upcoming few weeks here at WrestlingObserver.com. Usually a lot of these shows run both at Wrestling Observer and at When It Was Cool. But I'm going to do some exclusive only shows for When It Was Cool for a while. But over here at Observer, I want to do a few weeks worth of what I consider my best shows. Now, you've probably never heard that. I don't think I've ever posted any of these over at Observer. I guess it's possible one or two might have got posted over here. But I've done some really, really in-depth shows called Saga of Specials. And there are several of these, and they are deep dives, really documentary style, deep dives into wrestling. This is for pro wrestling nerds like myself who, you know, just don't want the superficial stuff. We've heard all the stories. We've heard all the shoot interviews. We've read all the books. And we still want something deeper. We want literally every single detail about an incident. So, for the next few weeks, I'm going to be running the Saga of Specials here, and I hope you'll listen to these, collect these. This is what I do over at When It Was Cool. If you think this is interesting and you want to support my Patreon and my website over there, this is what we do a lot over there. So hope you'll consider that. But for you here, this is some really, really deep in there stuff. And again, I realize it's not for everybody. If you just, you know, are a superficial fan, you just like wrestling, but you know, got other things in your life, I understand. But for us who are really, I mean, just pro wrestling has been our life, these shows are for you. These are deep, deep, deep dives. And boy, we get into the minutiae of some stuff. So I hope you'll check it out. Hope you'll enjoy it. Please don't forget, I have a book available at Amazon.com called Dragon King Carl's 1983 Pro Wrestling Omnibus. Check that out. Available now. Go to the front page of whenitwascool.com. Follow us on Facebook and all that good stuff. All the links are there. So now let's dive deep, deep, deep into the history of pro wrestling.
Excuse me, please. Let's don't talk negatively. Speaking of winners, surprise, surprise, whenitwascool.com is your home for retro pop culture articles and podcasts. To all our patron supporters, this is for you, Fannie Mae. Solid gold just like you and me. Family friendly and fun, whenitwascool.com.
Hey everybody, this is pro wrestling historian Carl Stern. Perhaps you've known me as Dragon King Carl from WrestlingObserver.com. I do the Dragon King Carl Classic Wrestling Audio Show. I have my own website, whenitwascool.com, and the audio you're going to hear on this channel is selected shows from our pro wrestling history archives. These are in-depth biographies and stories about pro wrestling and in-depth history pieces. These all have been previously heard on our Patreon feed. Want to invite you to become a Patreon supporter at whenitwascool.com. Our supporters, again, have already heard these shows. There are 1,300 at the time I'm making this recording here, over 1,300 podcasts available on that feed. I think you'll find it a super value. You can come on at the $1 or $5 level to begin with, and that'll kind of get your foot in the door, and you can see what all we have to offer. Hundreds and hundreds of shows available at that level. Right now, enjoy a sample of what our Patreons have known for a long time. We offer over at whenitwascool.com. I can't wait to see you there. Now enjoy this show.
The When It Was Cool Podcast Network. Retro pop culture. Informative and fun and family friendly. Support us on Patreon at whenitwascool.com.
Whenitwascool.com.
The Run DMC album. Basically, it's tricky.
Your source for retro pop culture fun.
You're a yuppie.
Patreon funded.
Nowhere in the pages of history can one find a greater champion of justice. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear.
And I'll tell you something else, too, is I cannot stand sissies.
You're going to talk about wrestling, that's redneck talk.
And guess what, fatso? I'm the world champion.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a When It Was Cool Dragon King Carl podcast special, another Saga of episode. These have been very popular. Quite a few new people have signed up along the way because of these episodes to our Patreon feed. This is exclusive just for Patreons When It Was Cool. So thank you very much for listening. Before we begin, for those of you who are listening to this at the time it was released, and this is back in April of 2020, I have to make mention of the death of Travis Scott Bowden, who at the time I'm recording this passed away yesterday. Just recently got to sort of know Scott a little bit. In fact, he was scheduled to be on the next edition of the Old Time Wrestling Hour. We'd been talking about Memphis. He had contributed thoughts to the recent Dragon King Dark episode on Lord Humongous. In fact, one of the wrestling Lord Humongous characters, Mike Stark, the first one to do that gimmick in pro wrestling, was his coach in high school, believe it or not. And Scott had worked in Memphis, become a manager, and so we certainly want to send our condolences to his family and friends and know that he is on our mind. This episode is the saga of David Von Erich. And you can alternatively title this the saga of David Von Erich and the promised NWA World Heavyweight Championship, or you can title this the saga of David Von Erich and his untimely death. But it is going to be the most in-depth, most detailed exploration of really the last year of the life of David Von Erich that you've probably ever heard. Certainly, I've on these saga episodes, I undertake a lot of research. I really go through all any newsletters I have that relate to it, be they Observers or Torches or any of the other myriad newsletters from back in the day. I go through numerous results books. I go through TV tapings. I watch TV shows. I deep dive. If there's a book dealing with it, I read that information. And so I make notes and I come and I sit down. And our recent saga of episodes have been very, very popular. The first one, I guess, we did was the saga of Hulk Hogan and the AWA World Championship. What if he would have won it? And then we recently did the saga of Ric Flair jumping to WWF while still WCW and NWA World Champion. And today's is another sort of has a what-if aspect to it as well. I can't attribute this to any one particular Patreon because I'm probably asked this a few times a year by listeners to the Dragon King Carl shows or Patreons or somebody about whether, in fact, it really is true that David Von Erich was, quote, promised the NWA World Championship. Was David Von Erich about to be the NWA World Champion? Was that reality? Is that part of the Von Erich fantasy, pro wrestling lore, mythology? What is that? So today we're going to try to come to as definitive an answer as can be had on that. Plus, we're going to look at the reality and the mythology surrounding the death of David Von Erich and look at the last year or so of his life and what his trajectory was, what he was doing, the various players in this role, and much more. So again, strap in. This is going to be a very deep dive into pro wrestling history. The years we're going to be talking about are 1983 and 1984. All of this information I have now entered into the Ultimate History of Pro Wrestling Zones at When It Was Cool. So if you go to whenitwascool.com and go to the Ultimate History of Pro Wrestling Zone, you can kind of follow along through 1983, 1984. Most of this will be in your next newsletter that will come out at the end of April 2020. So be sure to download that too, and you can have a PDF copy of that to keep. As I went along, I entered each of these in, and I marked a lot of it as the saga of the death of David Von Erich because that accomplishes two things. Number one, people that just visit that for wrestling history can find this show, and perhaps that will encourage them to be supporters of our website, become Patreon members, and get and listen to the show. Next, it also helps you follow along the storyline, the story, the biography of what's happening. Now, I do happen to have the Observer issue that covered the death of David Von Erich. Now, all the relevant information is entered into the timeline. I have also all the results from around this time period and much more. And I guess we should start back and just say, you know, what was the wrestling world doing at this time? So things are a little bit just before things change, okay? Hulk Hogan is still in the AWA at this point in time. In fact, this is a good follow-up to that show. If you want to go listen to the saga of Hulk Hogan, the AWA world title, that will set the stage pretty well for what follows, because this follows right on the heels of that kind of. So the Muscle Man Hulkamania era of, you know, the big giant jacked up bodies, rock and wrestling, the real WWF machine hasn't really cranked up yet. So when people look at pro wrestling and pro wrestlers, here they have a little bit, maybe a different view than you might think. They're the world champions at this time are Bob Backlund in the WWF, certainly not a big monster giant. When we begin this story, the NWA World Heavyweight Champion is Ric Flair, definitely not a muscle guy. And in the course of this story, Harley Race will also be NWA World Champion. Again, not a giant muscle monster. In the AWA, it is Nick Bockwinkel. So these are the wrestlers that fans are looking at. Hulk Hogan certainly is on the rise. And here in the story we're going to be talking about, David's brother, Kerry Von Erich. I mean, he looks like a superhero, very muscular, very charismatic. He's on the rise as well. And before we go back to April of 1983, where we're going to kind of pick up David's story there, we need to go back even a few months earlier, because that is a very historic night in world-class wrestling as well. And at that point in time, that is the famous slamming of the cage door onto the head of Kerry Von Erich. So you have Kerry Von Erich against Ric Flair inside a steel cage in Dallas, Texas. The special referee for the match is Michael Hayes, who turns on Kerry in this match. In fact, the Freebirds as a group, a unit, turn on Kerry. Terry Gordy outside the ring slams the cage door on the head of Kerry because Kerry did not take advantage of Michael Hayes attacking Ric Flair and get the easy win there. And it's a real good story and everything, but if you pick up the story right there, you probably think that Kerry is the guy who's being groomed to be the next NWA World Champion, and why wouldn't you think that? Look at him. Kerry looks like $1 million. And he was, in a way, getting groomed to be the World Heavyweight Champion, but so was David, so was Kevin, who are all wrestling at this point in time. In fact, all three of the Von Erich brothers, the sons of Fritz Von Erich, who also plays, obviously, very heavily into this story, are definitely being groomed with the hope of being, you know, a family of world champions. And there's really no precedent for that. Yes, Dory Funk Jr. had been the NWA World Champion, and then later his younger brother Terry Funk's the NWA World Champion. But that's about the extent of it. There's certainly no dynasty of fathers and sons dominating this championship that very rarely changed hands. In addition to that, the dynamics of the National Wrestling Alliance itself are changing. National Wrestling Alliance come into existence in 1948. You can follow all that story on the Ultimate History of Wrestling website. Matter of fact, if you start 1948, pretty much work your way forward, you'll get a pretty good picture of all the various eras of the NWA, who was running them, what politics were going on, what lawsuits were going on, who the champions were. And in this era, yes, things are about to change with Vince McMahon's expansion, but not only that, there's infighting in the National Wrestling Alliance as well, and there always had been. The National Wrestling Alliance historically met in August every year, usually in Las Vegas, Nevada, sometimes other places, all the promoters would come together and they would hash out what they were going to do. They would hash out any complaints and grievances and people who thought they were being treated unfairly. Also, kind of not really an open forum, but with the main power players, would kind of decide who is going to be the NWA World Heavyweight Champion for that year. And that champion would travel the world on a brutal schedule. I mean, I don't think people, they hear these guys talk about it and they think, well, it's just wrestling, you know, just wrestlers exaggerating. But I've been researching this stuff a lot in the last few months, really putting this into the Ultimate History of Wrestling. The schedule for the NWA World Heavyweight Champion was absolutely insane. It's a wonder these guys lasted as long as they did as world champion. That era is nearing an end. They're still very much in it in 1983, no doubt about it. Ric Flair is, the schedule's insane. He'll be in Florida one night, St. Louis one night, Texas one night, back over in Georgia the next night, over in Japan another night, come back and be in New Zealand or somewhere, back in like Kansas City, just all over the place, almost no rhyme or reason. To the travel schedule, you got to wonder how sometimes it was even possible to make some of these trips. In fact, sometimes I've looked at these results and said they can't be right because there's no physical way to get from this town to this other town in a 24-hour period, yet somehow, some way, they figured out a way to do so, and it's just crazy. So this is why kind of in this era, you don't have that really long, long, long reigning NWA world champion the way you did with, say, your Lou Thesz or your Dory Funk Jr. or Jack Briscoe or people like that. Harley Race got quite a few breaks in there. Obviously, he ended up being an 8-time world champion. Ric Flair had multiple runs with the world title. Dusty Rhodes had a few short ones. You had Giant Baba thrown in there as transitional champion a couple different times. Tommy Rich in there as well. While these were short breaks, they were nevertheless kind of breaks to break up the monotony. 1983 would be one of those years. Ric Flair, that was the year of the first Starrcade, and that's important because Ric Flair is winding up his first run as NWA World Champion. He would lose the belt in 1983 to Harley Race, who would hold it for most of the year and end up dropping it back to Ric Flair at Starrcade Thanksgiving 1983. So where in here was David Von Erich going to be world champion? Well, if we look at things and go by what's been in the Observer, what Dave Meltzer has said on various audio shows, what I've read in books, Gary Hart's book in particular, which I do have a copy of, not a physical copy, but I do have the electronic copy that got passed around a lot, and interviews with different people. 1983 was not going to be the year David got the belt. It was probably happening in 1984, and we'll see when that would have been, how that would have played out. And as we know, one of the Von Erichs did, in fact, get it. Kerry got it in 1984, but as a result of the death of David Von Erich. And we'll see if that was going to be, in fact, David's championship win right there, if that was going to be the time where David was going to win it, or if it was going to come some other time, or if it was going to come at all. And if it was, when was it going to end? Was it going to be a short couple-week deal like Kerry? What did Kerry do as world champion? You think, well, he won the belt in Texas. He went on a tour of Japan. Ric Flair got it back there. Well, actually, Kerry did a little more than you might think while he was NWA world champion. So let's go back now, and we're going to start in April of 1983. But before I do, let's hear from David Von Erich himself. Now, this predates when we're starting. This is an interview, I think, from 1981. But this is just to give you an idea of the voice and character, charisma, and just sort of all-around attitude of David Von Erich. And then we're going to jump into 1983.
Right off the ranch, and I know what you're set for, but I want you to go over this whole deal. You've got spurs on, you've got gloves, you've got a quirt here. The bunkhouse match. 7:30 comes up at Reunion Arena tomorrow.
All right, Bill. Everybody just saw exactly what happened to Tim Brooks, what he did to my Corvette. Armand Hussein had his hand stuck in there also. Everybody saw it. I saw it the night it happened. I've seen it once at KTVT myself, and I came down here and I saw it again tonight. Now, the rules of the bunkhouse match are, as of this, no man is a winner unless the other man cannot get up or is counted down 1, 2, 3. You carry anything into the ring you want to. You wear anything you want to wear. You know, Bill, I've been breaking horses for a long time. And, you know, I haven't used these spurs. I want y'all to get a good close-up of this right here. These are brand-new pair of spurs here.
Oh, they're heavy.
Tim Brooks. The ones I used to have, I wore them out. But, you know, I broke a lot of quarter horses, but I've never broke a jackass before. And this is going to be my first time with Tim Brooks. And Armand Hussein, if you come out there a little bit later, I'm going to bake you, too. Now, I'm going to get on Tim Brooks after I beat him, like I promised everybody I would the last time I beat him, just exactly what I did. The only thing I didn't do is I didn't break his neck like I said I was going to do, and that'll leave, I can leave up to this next week, tomorrow night. Tomorrow night, Reunion Arena. Tim Brooks, I'm going to bring the spurs. I'm not going to wear them during the match. But when I finish, I'm going to get on top of you, and I'm going to ride you like a horse all the way around that ring, and you try bucking, because if you don't buck, I know where to kick to make you buck. And another thing, you might come out here with tight fists. These gloves right here, Bill, you tell me, do they look like they're fresh?
No, they've been worked with.
They've been worked with. You bet they have. And I'm going to tape my wrist all the way up to my elbow if it takes it. I'm going to cover both hands with these gloves. And Tim Brooks, I'm going to beat you like the bald-headed dog you are. And there ain't nobody going to stop me. All the referee's there for is to count the 1, 2, 3. You remember that. And also, I even brought this. This is a horse whip in case you had never seen one. What, Brooks, if you don't want to buck and if you don't want to move, this will move you. Armand, you stick your black nose in there and I'll whip it too. That's it.
That's pretty well covers the whole point.
1 year before the death of David Von Erich, we look and see what he was doing. Obviously, he's in world class. That is his primary number one area in which he works out of. It's owned by his father, Fritz Von Erich. At this point in time, he has two brothers in wrestling. Kerry and Kevin are both active wrestlers. Kerry, obviously, getting a big push. Kevin, a little less so. You sometimes hear it said that Kevin was, after David's death, he really became disinterested in wrestling. And I'm sure it affected him greatly. But even before that, a good year before this, Kevin is clearly the lesser pushed of the brothers. Now, he does have some world title matches in here. There are times it's teased that he is just a breath away from winning the World Heavyweight Championship. But it's clear going through all this at the time, reading the newsletter results, watching these TV shows, that Kevin is third in the pecking order. That the pecking order is almost a tie between David and Kerry, with Kevin in last place, quite frankly. And it alternates between David and Kerry. Kerry is just so charismatic, good-looking, and he has this dynamic presentation that David just doesn't have. David is much more traditional. Now, if you're in the mindset of April 1983, and you're looking at the world around you, again, the world of Bob Backlund, Nick Bockwinkle, Ric Flair. Certainly, if you had to choose a prototypical world champion, David's the guy. He's believed to be more dependable. He is believed to be more mature. His presentation is very good. His interviews are considerably better than Kerry's. But you just put Kerry in the ring, and he just shines. Now, he's not this amazing, incredible wrestler. He just has a very unique charisma that is just appealing and kind of an explosiveness that David lacks. David is pretty good all the way around. In fact, he's not just a brawler. He's not just a mat wrestler. I would say he's more of a brawler than a mat wrestler, but he's also explosive. He has these great high standing drop kicks. He has this great standing head scissors. Obviously, the Iron Claw is his big finisher. He is very, he looks like a much more fit Fritz Von Erich, quite frankly. He's billed at 6'7" tall. I don't know how tall he actually was, but I have photos of him standing right beside Ron Fuller, who is 6'9". In fact, I believe 1983 at the NWA conventions when they meet and are photographed together. And I've stood face to face with Ron Fuller, and I'm 6'3", and Ron Fuller is every bit of 6'9", like not fudged at all. And David is in his league, so I'm thinking David probably at worst 6'6" tall. He's a big dude, big tall dude, but he's slender, and he's not particularly ripped or particularly fit. He has what you know his joke today is kind of, he's skinny fat. He's not toned. He's not particularly ripped, not ripped at all, matter of fact, but he's just slender. He looks like a basketball player, which is a thing he did. But he's not so skinny as to look like a very young Barry Windham or later his brother Kendall or a Sam Houston or a Greg Gagne. I mean, he's heavier than those guys, but not by a ton. But he looks believable, and he certainly portrayed as tough, and he has a mean guy look. Okay, when he gets really intense, really starts cutting a hard promo, he sounds just like Fritz Von Erich, and it comes across as, I'm a pretty tough, realistic dude. Now, in the Ultimate History of Pro Wrestling zone, I have 1983 pretty well done. 1984, I'm only really just getting started on, and have added in all this David Von Erich stuff. But you have to remember that the qualifiers to make that list is the show you were on had to draw 5,000 or more people. Now, there's a lot of shows that aren't included because I don't have attendance for them. I have multiple sources to get these results, and they were either below 5,000 or they just were no attendance reported. So keep that in mind as we go through. This will encompass several areas. So the first thing I have for David Von Erich actually comes from April 16th, 1983, and he is on the Mid-South at the Superdome show in New Orleans, and I actually don't have the attendance for that show, although it's obvious it's more than 5,000 people, and it's even more obvious that this is a big, big-time show, a big, prominent show for Mid-South wrestling. Now, this is Bill Watts' group, which, of course, at this point in time, he was still friendly with Fritz Von Erich. They still were trading wrestlers back and forth some. And the results for that show were the Junkyard Dog defeated Mr. Olympia, that's Jerry Stubbs, of course, to win the North American title in a steel cage match. Andre the Giant defeated Kamala, and Kamala's going to end up being an important part of this story. Butch Reed defeated Kendo Nagasaki. The tag team of Mr. Olympia and Ted DiBiase defeated Mr. Wrestling 2 and Tiger Conway Jr. Chavo Guerrero defeated Bill Irwin. Bill Irwin's going to figure prominently in our story as well. Art Cruz defeated Kelly Kaniski. King Kong Bundy defeated Tim Horner. And in the match that features, who we're talking about, David Von Erich, David and Kerry Von Erich defeated Terry Gordy and Buddy Roberts, the Freebirds. So they take their big Von Erich Freebird program, of course, very popular all throughout the Mid-South, and bring it to the Superdome, where David gets a big tag team spotlight win with the more Kerry. It's a good thing that I think that they featured Kerry here instead of Kevin, because, I mean, that is a featured major tag team right there, David and Kerry. They're all over the magazines. Everybody who is a big-time fan of pro wrestling knows who they are. They've been featured on Mid-South Wrestling TV before. We jump now to June of 1983, June 17th, 1983. And we're going to go to Reunion Arena, and this is the big Star Wars show. 21,000 fans. There were multiple Star Wars shows that would have these holiday spectaculars, usually set around like the 4th of July, Thanksgiving, and Christmas. But there were a few that were just, hey, it's, you know, wrestling Star Wars. And this was one of those shows. And this has a pretty memorable match, and angle comes out of this for David. So in front of 21,000 fans there in Dallas, Texas, over from Japan, and obviously this factors big time in our story. There is a big working relationship between Dallas and All Japan Wrestling, the NWA and All Japan Pro Wrestling, Giant Baba's group. He has sent over Genichiro Tenryu, and he beats Johnny Mantell. Vicky Carrizana defeated Lola Gonzalez. Jose Lothario and Chris Adams and Chavo Guerrero defeated Bill Irwin, Fishman, and the Mongol. The Mongol, you'll hear his name used a lot throughout, is Gene Pettit. Gene Pettit was one of, like, Cousin Junior or something like that in WWF. I think Cousin Luke was not Gene Pettit. He was the other guy. Anyway, I think Cousin Junior was Gene Pettit, which is probably his most notable role in wrestling. Buddy Roberts defeated Iceman King Parsons in a hair versus hair match. And despite winning the match, Buddy Roberts had his hair removed and had this the cream rubbed all over it, and he's bald for a while after that. Next up, David Von Erich defeated Jimmy Garvin by DQ, and per their match stipulations, Sunshine, who was the valet of Jimmy Garvin, became David's valet for a day. This was a very famous skit played and replayed a lot of different times over the course of the next several months on World Class Wrestling. The magazines covered this as well. Pretty big storyline there. Now, this is also important, especially for later on in our story, the next match. The All Japan United National Champion, Jumbo Tsuruta, defeated Ted DiBiase. Now, the United National title was a belt that it existed in All Japan for a while at this point. It would eventually end up being part of the Triple Crown, the United National title, the PWF World title, and the International title. Those three belts in the 1990s, well, very late 1980s into the 1990s, became the Triple Crown Championship, a very prestigious big-name belt in Japan. And most of your big Japanese superstars who were so famous in that very popular, very good, very high-quality 1990s era for All Japan fought for that championship. So the United National Belt's part of it. United National Belt ends up being defended somewhat frequently over the next year here in the United States, and it becomes an important part of our story as well. Ted DiBiase and Jumbo Tsuruta and quite frankly, Genichiro Tenryu all figure into this story as well. And Jumbo Tsuruta, very interestingly, figures in post-death of David Von Erich, and we'll get to that as well. The another component of that Triple Crown Championship is also defended on this show as the PWF World Heavyweight Champion, Giant Baba, or, of course, not being called world title at this point because they're part of the NWA, but the PWF Champion, Giant Baba, defeated King Kong Bundy. Kamala defeated Arman Hussein and Toloyatsu and Mike Bond in a handicap match, and Toloyatsu was the world-class name for Yoshiaki Yatsu. A lot of Japanese wrestlers, so you can see they're working very close with All Japan. The NWA World Heavyweight Champion Harley Race defeated Kevin Von Erich by DQ, so Kevin is the guy kind of getting the push right here. And then Kerry Von Erich teams with Bruiser Brody to defeat the Freebirds, Michael Hayes and Terry Gordy, to win the American Tag Team Championship. So David's in his big program right here with Jimmy Garvin and Sunshine. Very soon, Jimmy Garvin will add another valet who would ultimately become known as Precious, his wife. Actually, she starts out as the valet for Sunshine. So not only does Jimmy Garvin have a valet, but his valet has a valet, and that was the joke for a little bit until it goes wrong later on in this program, and they end up fighting each other. In July 15th, 1983, David Von Erich is now wrestling not just in world class, but he's starting to appear other places as well, particularly St. Louis, Missouri. Now, St. Louis in this time period was still, even though we're in the post-Sam Mushnick era, still St. Louis is your showcase for the NWA. So if you've got people that are being groomed to be bigger stars, be main event stars, not just world champions, but main event stars. Hulk Hogan's going to be regularly featured in St. Louis during this era. The Crusher, Ken Patera famously in here. So if you, Ted DiBiase, if you've got a somebody that is really getting pushed, they're going to be on in St. Louis. So in St. Louis, Missouri. Now, this is the time period. We need to back up just a little bit because we just had Ric Flair defending the NWA World Title against Kevin Von Erich there in Dallas, Texas. Well, the world title very shortly changes hands here with Harley Race winning the NWA World Title from Ric Flair. And that title change took place in St. Louis, Missouri, with Harley Race. So we switch here in June to Harley Race. So now when the World Heavyweight Champion comes to town, it's going to be Harley, and Harley's going to hold it, of course, until Starrcade this year, and that's to build the big program up with Ric Flair. So that's why you have this changeover. But for David, it's still going to be, he's still going to be prominently featured. Now it just doesn't matter who the world champion is. In fact, on one of the later world-class television shows, they show video footage of David coming in into the ring and attacking Harley Race following a match with, I want to say, with Kevin. Kevin's arm gets, in quote, injured during the match. And David runs in for the save. He gets Kevin disqualified. And we'll talk about what he says in that match to Harley. And it's pretty telling what their plans for David is in that regard. So July 15th, 1983, about a month after Harley has won the NWA World title, Ric Flair wins the Missouri title. Yes, Ric Flair, in between, a lot of people forget this. I often forget it. That between the time in 83 where Ric Flair lost the world title to Harley and or lost it to Harley and then won it back at Starrcade, Ric Flair was the Missouri champion. He wins it in a tournament beating Bob Brown, George Wells, Butch Reed, and David Von Erich. In fact, he beats David in the finals. So David's still in that mix among the top guys. Harley Race, Ric Flair, David Von Erich. He's right in there. So I talked about Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan was on that same show. He fought Jerry Blackwell to a no contest. So he's being featured in St. Louis. Your big stars, your big showcase stars, that's where they're getting featured. August 26, 1983, St. Louis, Missouri. Hulk Hogan defeated Crusher Blackwell by countout. Dick the Bruiser defeated the Super Destroyer, or battled Super Destroyer, rather, to no contest. And this is Scott Irwin. So Scott and Bill Irwin are going to be the various Super Destroyers, and they're going to be regularly mentioned in our story here. David Von Erich teams with, of all people, Jerry Lawler to defeat the team of Blackjack Mulligan and Blackjack Lanz. That's a very odd team. I'm not sure that happened very many times in history. May have only happened this one time, where David Von Erich teams with Jerry Lawler. So you can see he's getting featured in a lot of different places, in the mix with a lot of top stars. Now, David doesn't ever go to Memphis, but you could see he's being, they've got some footage now, right, if they ever did bring him in. And why would they bring him in? Well, Memphis largely recognized the AWA world champion. Nick Bockwinkel's the world champion, but Memphis recognized whoever they wanted to as world champion. Ric Flair came in to the studio one time. Could it be that now they've got video footage of David and Jerry teaming together, Jerry Lawler, if David, in fact, becomes the world heavyweight champion? So it's interesting. Got something in their arsenal there to make a TV appearance out of if need be. Now, we're really going to pick up the story in September of 1983, because this is the last few months of David's life. And this is where really the story really gets kind of interesting. And we're going to start with September 5th, 1983, Labor Day Star Wars in Fort Worth, Texas. This is at the convention center. 11,573 people are there. Your card for this event is Chris Adams defeated Mr. Ebony, who was a masked Tom Jones. Kerry Von Erich defeated Michael Hayes in a country whipping match. Kevin Von Erich defeated world-class American champion Jimmy Garvin by DQ. Bruiser Brody defeated Kamala by DQ in a lumberjack match. Johnny Mantell defeated the Mongol. Again, that's Gene Pettit. The world-class six-man tag team titles, the Freebirds, Michael Hayes, Terry Gordy, and Buddy Roberts, defeated Kerry, Kevin, and David Von Erich. Now, David also had a singles match. He won this one, however, and he was defending the Texas championship, which he held against Terry Gordy. And Iceman Parsons beat Buddy Roberts. So the Labor Day Star Wars card, David Von Erich wrestles twice. He beats Terry Gordy and then gets beaten by the Freebirds. So we're still continuing this Freebirds feud. David Von Erich is being spotlighted in St. Louis as well. Clearly there's connections there between with the Von Erichs and All Japan Pro Wrestling. So a lot of ingredients are there to shine this spotlight on David Von Erich. But how bright is that spotlight, and is it still David? Well, we get a big answer to big, should say evidence to the answer to that question. September 16th, 1983. We go back to St. Louis, Missouri this time. Of course, we now know Ric Flair is the NWA Missouri champion. On this same show, Hulk Hogan beats Jerry Blackwell again. Obviously, they're working a program there in St. Louis. But Ric Flair loses the NWA Missouri title to David Von Erich. Now, this is very important. Why? Because we already know that in 2 months, Ric Flair is going to get the NWA world title back from Harley Race. So what are we trying to do here? We're trying to build contenders for the next world heavyweight champion. This was a very common thing that the National Wrestling Alliance done. Your world heavyweight champion or your future world heavyweight champion would make the rounds to various areas and lose to your hometown hero. Matter of fact, at some point during this time right here, Ric Flair comes to Southeastern Wrestling and loses to Bob Armstrong. Why? Because Ric Flair is about to become the world champion. To the hometown fans, Bob Armstrong has beat the guy who's now the World Heavyweight Champion. Therefore, Bob Armstrong should be able to win the NWA World title. It's the same thinking here. David Von Erich, you always hear the magazines push this narrative that the Missouri title was a stepping stone to the NWA World Championship. That's about to be a self-fulfilled prophecy right here with Ric Flair. He's about to add his name to that list. And one would assume that David Von Erich perhaps is doing the same. Clearly, they're setting up in two months' time. David Von Erich has beat the guy who's about to be the NWA World Champion. A very interesting booking outside of the world-class area. So we go to the world-class TV taping at the Sportatorium on September 23rd, 1983. And so when they do this TV taping, David is the Missouri champion. But that's not really recognized here. If they mentioned it, I missed the mention of it. I mean, I suppose it's possible that they may have mentioned it, but I don't think they did. It's kind of a separate, taking place in a separate universe kind of thing. These tapings, now, it's kind of hard to keep up with these TV tapings because they would chop these things up. They'd actually tape the show, and then they'd use some of the matches on one show, some on another. Some would never see the light of day. Some of them you wouldn't see for months down the road. Some other times you'd see the whole taping in full. So we're going to actually look at the TV shows as well, but this is the taping at the Sportatorium in Dallas, and this was on September 23rd. 1983. So here, especially in just a little bit, you'll hear me talk one day about a taping at the Sportatorium in Dallas, Texas, and then the TV show the next day, and it'd be completely different. Well, that's because they're you know, it's not just strict continuity there as far as what order things are aired in. And that will actually come up very important later on once David Von Erich has actually died. It presents a real strange sort of continuity quirk coming up. But the World-Class TV Taping Sportatorium in Dallas, Texas, September 23rd, 1983, Terry Gordy defeated Kerry Von Erich by DQ. Bruiser Brody defeated Michael Hayes by DQ. David's going to be on this show twice. David Von Erich and Chris Adams teamed together to defeat the Mongol and Gene Pettit and Boris Zukov by DQ. We'll talk about that match when it airs. Johnny Mantell battled Buddy Roberts to a draw. Johnny Mantell defeated Bill Rathke, the big squash match. And then David in a singles match against the Mongol. They would split this up over two different TV shows, and we'll talk about it coming up. And Iceman Parsons defeated Bill Rathke again. So you got a kind of a mixture of some squashes and some competitive matches on there that will be used over the course of a few different TV shows. So on October 1st, 1983, this is the show that airs for World Class Championship Wrestling. And you can watch this on the WWE Network. It is available on there under October 1st, 1983. Video of the NWA World Champion Harley Race versus Kevin Von Erich is aired. Now, this match actually took place way back in June 10th of 1983. Harley had just won the world title at that point. It's now airing months later, but they actually put a graphic up on screen saying it was from June. I don't know why they would have done that. They could have acted like it was more recent than that. It would have made further sense. But anyway, during the match, Kevin's arm is, quote, injured in storyline during the match. And David Von Erich comes down to ringside to cheer on Kevin. But Harley kicks David, and David attacks Harley Race, causing a DQ. So Harley wins and retains the NWA World title by DQ. David then beats down Race, and like it's a beatdown too. I mean, he beats him down to the mat, gets on top of him, throwing fists, ground and pound. He gets up and grabs the NWA World title and then walks over and gives, basically Race is laying on the mat looking up at David. David is cutting an intense promo, and he's reading him the riot act and says in this promo, and this has every earmark of, this is a guy who we've decided is going to be the world champion. Now, mind you, during all this, back in August, we would have had the NWA meeting, the NWA convention in Las Vegas. We know David was there. David's photographed a few times talking to Ron Fuller. He's photographed with various dignitaries of the NWA. So he's clearly there with his father, and they're hobnobbing with the NWA elite. So he bends down, holding the 10 pounds of gold, the domed globe belt, right in Harley's face, and he tells Harley, if I don't beat you, I will quit wrestling. And then he says, he rephrases it, which tells you something, because we're a month away from what happening. Ric Flair getting the NWA World title at Starrcade. That was already decided at this point. David, apparently realizing this or remembering his point, says, "I don't whether it's you or Ric Flair, I'm going to beat you or I'm going to quit wrestling." So it seems like evidence would suggest, I would argue if we were holding trial over this, I would argue that is strong evidence for the fact that the NWA has decided to go from Harley Race at Starrcade to Ric Flair and then to David Von Erich at some point thereafter. So, is David Von Erich promised the NWA world title in 1983? I would argue strongly, no, not at least unless in December sometime, and we'll look at that December Star Wars card. Obviously, David didn't win it there, so it's clearly on down the road somewhere. But we got Harley to Flair to David saying, I'm going to beat one of the two of you or quit wrestling. It's very interesting. That's a very interesting promo, especially since he backtracks and has to repeat himself to get Flair in there too, since a little over a month from now, Harley's not going to be the world champion. And this is already known inside the circles, not to the fans, obviously. This same episode from October 1st, 1983, continues to focus on David Von Erich. They then re-air the Valet for a Day feature where Jimmy Garvin and Sunshine had to work for David for a day on his ranch. Then we get the Mongol, Gene Pettit, managed by Skandar Akbar, against David Von Erich. Referee for that match is Bronco Lubick. David Von Erich wins with the Iron Claw. The Mongol blades from the Iron Claw. They were doing this regularly during that time period. David looks energetic and quick. He hits several high drop kicks, a flying knee. In October, looks pretty healthy. Now, David's physique, again, I described as kind of skinny fat. He still is that here. He might be putting on a little bit of weight, but not much. I would say, at most 5 pounds or so. He actually has a little bit of a gut. Not much. I mean, he has just a bit of muffin top sticking out over his drawers there. He's not like Harley Race out of shape, but he's not just showing ripped abs or anything. He's got a little bit of girth on him. So he's adding weight. Maybe he's just good and healthy. But in October of 1983, he's looking pretty good. Looking very good, actually. So the next time we discuss David is October 7th, 1983. There's another TV taping at the Sportatorium in Dallas, Texas. The NWA World Heavyweight Champion Harley Race defeated Iceman Parsons by DQ. We'll talk about this as well. David's involved in this match also. David Von Erich defeated Jimmy Garvin by DQ on this show. Michael Hayes beat Johnny Mantell. Kamala beat Art Cruz. Chris Adams and Johnny Mantell defeated the Freebirds, Michael Hayes and Buddy Roberts. Jose Lothario defeated the Mongol by DQ. Jimmy Garvin beat Art Cruz. And Boris Zukov defeated Mike Reed. So we'll cover the appropriate chopped up bits of that when we get to them. Now then, on October 10th, 1983, this is the world-class TV show that airs. You have the match, the Mongol and Boris Zukov, managed by Skandar Akbar. They take on David Von Erich and Chris Adams. The referee is Jerry Usher. Chris Adams and David Von Erich win when Skandar Akbar interferes. David puts the claw on Skandar Akbar. So they put over David pretty strong, but it's a slow, plodding, low-energy match. David Von Erich hits a nice flying head scissors early on, but really doesn't do a lot else the rest of the match. Now, the main event of this TV show is Terry Gordy against Kerry Von Erich. Terry Gordy continues to beat on Kerry late in the match, and David runs in to save Kerry and puts the claw on Gordy. Gordy wins by DQ. David Von Erich is starting to get a habit of interfering in other people's matches and causing the DQs. Now, they've mostly been his brothers, but there would be, others as well. I think he does this to Iceman Parsons and Chris Adams, and maybe that's to set up future programs with Iceman King Parsons and Chris Adams. I can't imagine they would ever put one of the Von Erichs against one another. But the takeaway from this is David is still being put over strong, particularly the Iron Claw is being put over strong. I mean, he juices the Mongol with it. As we'll find out in a minute, the scariest man in wrestling at this point in time is scared to death of the Iron Claw. It's very interesting to see this. October the 15th, 1983, on the world-class television show, the main event is Jimmy Garvin. He's accompanied by both Sunshine and Precious against David Von Erich. Referee for this match is Bronco Lubick. David's energetic and entertaining during the match. He even does some struts. He mimics Jimmy Garvin. He's putting on a good match. out of the blue, the match is going on, and out of the blue, Kamala runs in and attacks David Von Erich. Now, Kamala's not helping Jimmy Garvin. He's just attacking David. In fact, Jimmy's like in a rear chin lock when this happens, and Jimmy just bails out and goes. Kamala attacks him, so David wins by DQ. David then puts the iron claw on Kamala. And this is important because at this point in time, Kamala is the scariest man in wrestling. He's been put over in Memphis and in Mid-South and now in World Class as literally, not figuratively, literally a cannibal. In fact, there's a very gross scene that happens, and we'll talk about when it airs on TV. I'm not even kidding. He's an unstoppable monster. He's like a, I don't even know who you compare him to nowadays, a Brock Lesnar almost, in that he's, nobody can beat him. In fact, they put over several times, the only person who's could beat Kamala, who has beat Kamala, is David Von Erich. And David Von Erich puts a claw on Kamala, and they begin to sell it as though Kamala fears nothing except the iron claw of David Von Erich. Kamala literally runs away at one point in time when David throws up the claw hand, and he refuses to tag into a match. It's the first time Kamala is showing fear, at least here in World Class, and a big deal is made out of it. So that's the October 15th, 1983 show. So if you want to watch it, all these are on the network as well. On the 21st, October 21st, 1983, we're going back to St. Louis, Missouri. Remember, David's the Missouri heavyweight champion still in amongst all this. So in St. Louis, Missouri, Hulk Hogan defeated Crusher Blackwell, this time in a steel cage match. The NWA Missouri champion David Von Erich defeated the Super Destroyer, and this is Scott Irwin. And so he's going to figure into the story a lot more later on. So David makes a successful defense of the Missouri title. I'm guessing he's still Texas heavyweight champion as well at this time. It's kind of weird. They sometimes mention this Texas title. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes David brings it out and makes a big deal of it. There's the belt. I'm champion. Sometimes they never mention it, and his belt's never seen. I don't have in here any place he's lost it. Maybe he did. I'm actually going to go look right here and see if I can find the Texas championship. And, yeah, it looks like the fact that David Von Erich is also the Texas heavyweight champion, having won it in August when we mentioned it. And so I guess they just routinely don't mention the fact that he's also Texas champion. So he's Texas and Missouri champion. So two out of the 50 states he holds the championship at this time. All right. Moving now to the show, TV show that airs on October 22nd, 1983. World Class Wrestling TV, they replay David Von Erich putting the iron claw on Kamala from last week to play up the fact that Kamala now has a weakness, and it is his iron claw. Now, here's the match I was talking about. NWA World Heavyweight Champion Harley Race versus Iceman King Parsons. David Von Erich's in the ring for the introduction. Harley Race protests the fact that, number one, David Manning is the referee, which he thinks Manning has a bias against him, and that David Von Erich's at ringside, but he's allowed to remain there as long as he sits in a chair. Well, the match is pretty good. The match is pretty long. I encourage you to go watch it. It's probably one of the best matches Iceman Parsons ever had. Iceman Parsons was a good wrestler, not taking anything away from him, but Hardy's really good here, and so is Iceman Parsons. And late in the match, Harley reaches through the ropes and slaps David from the ring. You know, David sitting in the chair on the floor, reaches through the ropes, slaps David. This brings David inside, and he starts beating up Harley, which, of course, gets Iceman Parsons disqualified. Now he's done this to two or three people, got him disqualified because he couldn't cool his temper, but he's also beat up the world heavyweight champion. Now, Harley's not going to have that belt much longer, but David is still very, very strong in the way he's being booked. The next TV show we have is October the 29th, 1983, and the highlights begin the show of a six-man tag team match, Iceman Parsons and Chris Adams and David Von Erich against the team of Kamala. Kamala, the Mongol, and Michael Hayes. Skandar Akbar's at ringside. There's a funny segment where, remember, Kamala is a crazed savage. Michael Hayes reaches over and tags Kamala's hand. Kamala thinks that Michael Hayes has hit him, and so he attacks Michael Hayes until Skandar Akbar can get him straightened out that Michael Hayes is, in fact, his partner. Late in the match, Kamala refuses to get in the ring against David Von Erich. David throws up the claw sign, and Kamala's like shaking his head. Nope, won't do it. Nope. Pointing at his own head and acting all nervous and scared. It's pretty good. Kamala, James Harris was actually a pretty good actor in the role of Kamala. As problematic as that character is, he done a good job with it. But anyway, Kamala runs away from the Iron Claw. Chris Adams ends up pinning the Mongol following a super kick to win that match. It was really the point of that for David was, again, to show that the scariest man in wrestling is afraid of David Von Erich and the claw hold. We go now to November. November 4th, 1983. We're closing in. This is the same month. Starrcade will happen at the end of the month on Thanksgiving. But the first week of the month in St. Louis, Missouri, the NWA Missouri champion David Von Erich again defeats Ric Flair. So he not only beat him for the title, he has successfully retained against him, and that was your main event for that particular St. Louis show. So he's getting heavily featured. The next day, World Class TV airs, but David's not on it. In fact, he's not even mentioned on there. Very strange. The spotlight's not on him in Texas at the moment, but it certainly is in St. Louis. November the 12th, 1983, the TV show for World Class Wrestling. So this will be the week later. There's a lengthy mid-show sit-down interview with Fritz Von Erich. And this is the show where they're wanting to introduce Mike Von Erich. Now, David is not on this show. David's not mentioned on this show. David's not featured at all on this show. The spotlight's clearly on Mike. So why so much so? Well, obviously, he's Fritz's son, and they want to put over Mike huge. Mike is clearly the most frail and least impressive of the Von Erichs, so they go into overdrive saying, oh, he's the greatest athlete. They repeat this several times. He's the better wrestler of any of the Von Erichs. He's held the most athletic championships of the various Von Erichs. There's poor Mike. He just looks like he doesn't even belong on this planet, much less in this ring, and they're making a huge deal out of it. Obviously, he's being rushed in the ring too quick. Like, Mike needed a good, solid another year of eating his Wheaties and working out and whatever else those Von Erichs did and before he did this. Could it be that they realized in a few months' time David's not going to be around that much? David may be traveling. And so they need three Von Erich boys to be in there. So they do this deal where Kerry Von Erich presents his first ever ring jacket to Mike. Michael Hayes comes out, of course, then tears up the ring jacket. No, who knows why Kerry just left and went to the back and didn't come back out to help, but he did. Hayes tears it up. And then Mike goes on the offensive and attacks Michael Hayes. He looks pretty strong. Then there's a big brawl with Mike and Kerry. Finally finds his way back to the ring, and they brawl with Michael Hayes and Buddy Roberts. This leads to a loser-leave-town match challenge between Michael Hayes and Kerry Von Erich. Now, spoiler alert, Michael would end up leaving town for 1 year, supposedly. The main event of the show is Kerry and Kevin Von Erich against Michael Hayes and Terry Gordy in a country whipping match. We already talked about where that was taped, and Kevin and Kerry win by DQ due to Kevin being thrown over the top rope. And again, no mention of David. They firmly put the spotlight on Kevin and Kerry and particularly Mike in this episode. And again, you have to wonder, is they rushing Mike in the ring because they got to get this other Von Erich boy in there, or is it because they're anticipating needing to establish Mike strong for when David maybe is not around. On the next TV show, November 19th, 1983, the focus is back on David. David is focused on for just a moment. Actually, they just show highlights of David against Kamala, putting that over strong. David won when he put the claw hold on Kamala Friday, who was, you know, sometimes it was the masked dude with Kamala was either Friday or Kim Chi later on, that dude. He threw in the towel for Kamala while he was in the Iron Claw. Otherwise, David does not appear on the show, and the main focus is on Carrie Von Erich and the Freebirds and their feud, but they did make sure to get David on TV so he wasn't off Texas TV for too long. Because then, one of the biggest nights in wrestling history, November 24th, 1983, not only was that the night for Starrcade 1983 in Greensboro, North Carolina, 15,447 see Ric Flair defeat Hardy Race for the NWA World Heavyweight title, special guest referee Gene Kaniski. So Ric Flair is now the world champion. There was also a big show at the Omni in Atlanta for Georgia Championship Wrestling, the big tag team tournament that took place there. And Tommy Rich and Buzz Sawyer defeated the Road Warriors to win in that one. But also it was a big night in Texas. 18,500 people come out to Reunion Arena to see Star Wars. Now, we know, of course, Ric Flair or Harley Race is not going to be on this card because they're in Greensboro trading the world title. So what happens here? We get Johnny Mantell and Mike Reed and Jose Lothario. They defeat Boris Zerkov, Black Gordman, and Tonga John, who is a young barbarian with an afro, I might add. The Missing Link defeated Buddy Roberts. Kevin Von Erich defeated Terry Gordy. David has managed to dig out of his trunk the Texas title again, and he defeats Kamala by DQ to retain the Texas championship. Mike Von Erich defeats Skandar Akbar. That would be Mike's debut. It would air on TV a little while down the road. World-class American Tag Team Champions are the Super Destroyers, Scott and Bill Irwin. They battle Junkyard Dog and Iceman Parsons to a double DQ. Chris Adams beats Jimmy Garvin to win the American title. And Kerry Von Erich defeated Michael Hayes in a loser-leave-town steel cage match. So David getting in the defense of the Texas title over Kamala the night that Ric Flair regained the NWA title. So the next night, David travels from Dallas, Texas to St. Louis, Missouri. And he's going to be, and the answer to the question is, who is the first person to face Ric Flair when he won the world title back following Starrcade? Ric Flair didn't get to take the day off. No, he has to go from Greensboro to St. Louis, where he defeats David Von Erich, the Missouri champion, to retain the NWA title. David had done beat Ric Flair twice, wants to win the Missouri title and wants to retain the Missouri title. And now here on November 25th, 1983, in front of a crowd of 8,746, we get Ric Flair needs a little rub back, right? And I don't know the circumstances of this. I would presume some degree of cheating involved perhaps for Ric Flair, but that's what happened. The next day on TV, November 26, 1983, world-class TV, it's a highlight week. They're showing highlights of various shows, kind of like a year in review sort of thing. David's intermittently in some video clips, but he's not really the focus of anything. There's no interviews, no matches with him. It mostly focuses on Kevin and Kerry against the Freebirds. But David's about to get a big win in Texas. On November 28th, 1983, 2 days later, they're in Fort Worth, Texas. David Von Erich defeats the NWA World Heavyweight Champion Ric Flair in a non-title match in Fort Worth, Texas. Now, I don't know why this was a non-title match. Perhaps it was supposed to be Harley Race. Remember, in storyline in Texas, it was supposed to be Harley Race. And maybe Ric Flair says, nope, you've got a world title match with Harley Race. You don't have one with me. I don't know what the circumstances are, why Flair, this was a non-title match, but David beats him. So clearly, You know, David is still, the spotlight's on him. He's being pushed. Anything you wanted to do to ensure that in 1984, this guy has the record, has the program set up to be a traveling NWA world champion for a while, it's there. All right, so we go now to December 3rd, 1983. And this is the TV show that airs for World Class Wrestling. It's largely highlights from the Thanksgiving Star Wars show. David and Kerry and Kevin and Mike all have an interview hyping Mike's debut. So David's there. David even speaks a few words on this interview. Mike Von Erich versus Skandar Akbar is shown from that Reunion Arena show. Sam Mushnick is sitting at ringside. He's introduced. Kevin Von Erich brings Mike out but remains away from ringside. They keep pushing Mike as the best athlete of the family when clearly he's not. Mike is frail, non-athletic, and uncharismatic. Akbar carries the match and does a good job. He bumps all over the place for Mike. Mike wins with a roll-up as Akbar is trying to get his crop whip. And Mike takes away the whip and hits Akbar with it. Kevin's at ringside to congratulate him. David's only involvement in this show, this whole episode, was that one quick little interview participation with introducing Mike. So, on December 10th, 1983, the next TV show, it's strongly focused on David. All right, particularly David and Kamala. So he's beat Ric Flair in Reunion Arena. He's now about to, the whole purpose of this show is to show he is superior in every way to the scariest man in wrestling, Kamala. There's video footage of David Von Erich against Kamala and Skandar Akbar. Hits David with the whip, actually hitting him in the back of the head. It looked pretty brutal. There's an interview with David Von Erich, and David's pushed as the only person to have beaten Kamala. He cuts a good tough guy promo, and then there's video of David against Kamala from Reunion Arena. Kamala's billed at 6'10", and David is billed at 6'7", but David's clearly a few inches taller than Kamala. I have stood face-to-face with Kamala, too. I worked a show with him over in Starkville, Mississippi one time. And we are about the same height, and I'm 6'3", so Kamala, James Harris, was probably maybe 6'4", giving him a bit of the doubt. I think we were about eye level to one another. David, in those pictures with 6'9", Ron Fuller, looks like he's up there, so I'm saying David's probably legit 6'6", tall. That would put him probably 2 to 3 inches taller than Kamala, and that looks about right. David gets busted open in the match. Kamala... And this is like, nobody ever mentions this. You know, Kamala, of course, supposed to be a cannibal. As stereotypical and insulting as that is, I'm just telling you what the story is. He's supposed to be a cannibal from Uganda. David Von Erich's busted open in the match, and Kamala literally starts licking the blood off David's head. He goes down and starts biting where he's bleeding, gets blood all over his own face, wipes it off, and licks the blood like he's a cannibal, and now he's starving for human flesh. It's remarkable. It's on the network, too, by the way, WWE Network. Pull that December 10th, 1983 episode, and that's what we're talking about here. David kicks out of the big Kamala splash, the one where Kamala runs and fats all over him. Well, David kicks out of it. Puts the iron claw on Kamala. Kamala makes it to the ropes, but then Friday and Skandar Akbar is both there. David attacks both of them. David wins by DQ, but Kamala attacks him from behind, and Skandar Akbar begins choking him with his head covering, and Kerry comes in for the save, and then shockingly and quite impressively, body slams Kamala, and it's not a weak slam either. He picks him up head over heels and slams him right to the mat. So they're putting Kerry over strong there as well. Now the next day, Ric Flair goes on a tour of Japan. So all Japan's starting their kind of busy season here where they'll tour, run basically every day for a month, take like 3 weeks off, and then run another tour. They're doing this. This will become important in our story, but Ric Flair goes over there first night over there. In Yokosuka, Japan, Giant Baba. This is the tag team this will be right before the tag team tournament, by the way. Six-man tag team match, Giant Baba, Great Kabuki, and Dory Funk Jr. defeated Ric Flair, Barry Windham, and Ron Fuller. And Barry Windham and Ron Fuller are over there to be a tag team in the annual tag team tournament. The next night after that, on the 12th, Great Kabuki defeated Ric Flair by DQ in Tokyo, Japan. So on December 17th, 1983, the world-class TV show, there's no mention of David Von Erich on this episode. It focused on the feud between the Super Destroyers and their manager, Skandar Akbar, and Kerry Von Erich and Iceman Parsons. There's not really much David on the December 24th, 1983 episode of World Class Wrestling. They only play a sappy, just absolutely 1980s music video of David Von Erich on a horse to some song about sad cowboys. And that's just what it is. Christmas night, 1983. Christmas, like Thanksgiving, was a big night in the territory. So December 25th, 1983, from Reunion Arena, 19,675 fans in attendance, so business is strong. David Von Erich defeated NWA World Heavyweight Champion Ric Flair by DQ. Yes, so he gets another win. So he just keeps repeatedly getting wins over Ric Flair. He's been shown literally standing over a beaten-down Harley Race, shoving the Dome Glow belt in his face, telling him how he's going to beat one of them or quit. David is in ascension here, definitely. He is clearly 1984. Big things are planned for one David Von Erich. But, as we know, fate would have a different idea. Now then, on the 31st, the last day of 1983, would be the last television show for 1983 of World Class Wrestling. They have highlights from the Christmas Star Wars card. They show Kerry Von Erich defeating Kamala by DQ. Kerry Von Erich body slams Kamala again. Kevin Von Erich comes in for backup, and David Von Erich does not appear on the show. So that's 1983. So we're going to take a break right here. We're going to hear from David Von Erich again. This promo is from 1983, which you're about to hear. And then we're going to cover the last 2 months of David Von Erich's life. And then we'll go into, was he going to win the NWA World title as supposedly promised? And if so, when was that going to be? And what would that look like right after this?
Now, David Von Erich, we've heard Gorgeous Jim spout off about this valet mess. Gorgeous Jimmy Garvin, my favorite subject. Okay, it's signed. Everybody knows that if David Von Erich gets beat by Jimmy Garvin, it is in the contract, and I will not lose my professional wrestling license by not honoring that contract. If Jimmy Garvin beats me, fine, I will be his valet for a day. But when I beat Jimmy Garvin, then we're going to see, first of all, how well that valet sunshine of his can do on cleaning cattle. I got 160 head of cattle that need a bath real bad. Then, Jimmy Garvin, if you want to go on the other hand, I got 270 acres, and I just wonder how long it's going to take you to mow it by hand, boy.
With a push mower, no doubt.
A push mower. I ain't talking about the automatic kind. I'm talking about the kind where the blades twirl like this, and you got to go back and forth and back and forth.
All those horses he's got to clean up.
That's
after
it. When we get all done with all that, Gorgeous Jimmy, after it's all over, then I'm going to take you into my horse stalls, and I'm going to have you do what I know a city boy like you don't know what this means, but it's called mucking stalls. And that's when you board your horses up at night, you got to go up there and clean up the little mess they made the night before. And it don't smell real good, but Garvin, it smells a whole lot better than you.
1984 is a major year in pro wrestling history for many different reasons. It's certainly a transitional year. As we've just seen, a month earlier, Ric Flair has begun his second reign as NWA World Heavyweight Champion. This month, we're about to begin. It's going to see Hulk Hogan win the WWF World Championship from the Iron Sheik at Madison Square Garden. The Hulkamania era is about to begin. Nick Bockwinkel is still the AWA World Champion, although that's about to change as well. Things are definitely changing. And for reasons beyond just whatever David would have ended up doing, wrestling's going to change. Jim Crockett Promotions, by necessity in the war that WWF is starting on the rest of pro wrestling, Vern Gagne largely just rolled over and died and just let WWF basically destroy them. Jim Crockett at least tried to fight back, and one of the things he did in doing so was clamp down on the NWA World Championship. So those things would have likely have changed anyway. But David is in this very nebulous time period where the NWA is still largely doing business as usual. They're certainly aware of Vince McMahon and what he's doing, but for the moment seem to kind of be doing business as usual, seem to be kind of treating it as well. You know, he's not going to come after us. The NWA is going to protect itself, even though that didn't end up being the case. What of David? David has been pushed throughout 1983, as we've seen, as the heir apparent to the World Heavyweight Championship. He's been protected, not just in world class, but in St. Louis as well. He's had that dominated Harley Race in a post-match angle. He's beaten Ric Flair for the Missouri title, to retain the Missouri title. He's fought back and forth with him. He lost to Ric Flair, but then he beat him by DQ in a match as well. So we enter 1984 with David Von Erich very much on the rise, and Japan is about to start figuring into it. We've already seen a very close connection between world class and All Japan Pro Wrestling, and that's ante's only going to be upped, but there's going to be a transitions of such coming up. January the 6th, 1984, in St. Louis, Missouri, we're going to see the new NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Ric Flair. He's going to beat Bruiser Brody by DQ to retain his title. David, however, David Von Erich, is going to lose the Missouri Championship to the former NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Harley Race. So we still have in our top three, and remember, even still here, although this is the very last days of it, even still here, where St. Louis goes, the NWA goes, and your top three guys are Ric Flair, Harley Race, and David Von Erich. So they swapped the Missouri Championship and, quite frankly, the World Championship between the three of them. Ric Flair had the Missouri Championship. David Von Erich had the Missouri Championship. Harley Race had the Missouri Championship now. The Ric Flair had the NWA title. Harley Race had the NWA title. The only person out of that equation right now is David Von Erich. So on January 7th, 1984, the TV program airs for World Class Championship Wrestling, and Mike and Kevin Von Erich are featured on the show, but David does not appear. On the 1 week later on the TV show, he does appear in a very big way. Now, remember, the only people that have seen David Von Erich beat Ric Flair, the NWA World Champion, by DQ, were the people at Reunion Arena. They know those 18,000 or however many it was that were there. They've saw it. Words got around. People in Dallas largely know. Well, now everybody's going to get to see it on the TV show because Joined in Progress from Reunion Arena, David Von Erich versus NWA World Heavyweight Champion Ric Flair. Ric Flair blades in the match due to the Iron Claw. Yes, the old gimmick, we see it continue. We've seen Skandar Akbar have it happen to him. We saw the Mongol have it happen to him. We've seen Kamala have it happen to him. You know, David, when he puts the Iron Claw on people, they start bleeding, and Ric Flair does as well. David also is bleeding. It's a back-and-forth match. It's a hard-hitting match, but David is going to win the match by DQ. Ric Flair tried a couple times during the match to get himself disqualified, but referee David Manning wasn't having it. But finally, he could turn his back no longer as Ric Flair continued to flagrantly cowardly try to get out of the match. So David is again portrayed as superior to the NWA World Champion, Ric Flair. The next week on TV, January the 14th, 1984, and again, these are the dates that you'll want to watch on the WWE Network under the territories world class. David Von Erich does not appear on this show. The show revolves around Iceman Parsons announcing Andre the Giant as his special tag team partner and their match against the Super Destroyers, Scott and Bill Irwin. The next week, David's not on this show either. So we've got a month in Texas without seeing David on the show after showing him superior to the NWA World Champion. Yes, Flair escaped with his belt, but that's all he did was escape. There's a pretty well-known segment on the show where Bill Mercer goes duck hunting with the Von Erich family, but it's only Kevin and Fritz and Kerry that's there. David is not a part of that angle. January 30th, 1984, we go to Reunion Arena, and David is there, as a matter of fact. Your complete card for January 30th, 1984, Chris Adams and Sunshine in a mixed match. They defeat Jimmy Garvin and Precious, and first up for grabs in this match now is the American heavyweight title, and so that means Chris Adams is going to win that which is the major singles championship in world class, although you can see clearly that even though it's the major singles title in world class, David Von Erich and to a little bit of lesser degree Kerry, they're the main eventers. They're the main stars, belt or no belt. David still technically has this Texas title, which we've seen neither hide nor hair of. But guess what? He's about to add another belt to his collection. He's about to have two belts again. Because 2 days earlier in Athens, Georgia, of all places, Freebird Michael Hayes, beat Ted DiBiase for the All Japan United National title. Now, that belt had been, we'd seen it previously with Jumbo Tsuruta. Ted DiBiase had won the belt from Jumbo Tsuruta. This is an All Japan belt. And now, weirdly, in Athens, Georgia, Michael Hayes wins this belt from Ted DiBiase. Now, why did that happen? That seems to make no sense whatsoever. Well, there's a reason. That is, in fact, an All Japan belt. It is an All Japan belt for major rising stars of Japan, much the way the Missouri title is being treated in the United States, the United National title is being treated over there because Jumbo Tsuruta has just lost it. Well, we're about to see Jumbo Tsuruta makes pretty good for himself pretty soon. And Ted DiBiase, top star in All Japan, top star in Mid-South as well, and in Georgia, loses it weirdly to Michael Hayes, who is a big star in Georgia, but Michael Hayes is a transitional champion. This belt doesn't go to him for Michael Hayes to have it because Michael Hayes only holds it 4 days because he loses it on February 3rd, 1984 to David Von Erich in Dallas, Texas. David is about to go on his first tour of All Japan Pro Wrestling, and he's coming in as the United National Champion. Kudos for All Japan for not just doing a phantom title change or something like that. They actually had these belts change hands. DiBiase beat Tsuruta. Michael Hayes beat DiBiase, and David Von Erich beat Michael Hayes. Now, yes, people in the United States, particularly in Dallas, Texas, probably had no clue what the United National title it was, even though it was on a Reunion Arena show at a Star Wars earlier. It was just some nebulous Japanese championship that somebody had over there. But now David's got it, so it's got some attention. David is going into All Japan on this next tour as champion. He's also setting up programs with Michael Hayes, programs with Ted DiBiase, programs with Jumbo Tsuruta. They're still building ahead for David. Ric Flair, obviously, he still holds that DQ win over him. the Missouri title win over him. David is they're checking every box for David. On that same show in Dallas, NWA World Champion's there, Ric Flair. As a matter of fact, he beats the newly crowned American champion, Chris Adams, to retain the championship. So Ric Flair is, I guess you would say, by continuity, superior to the top champion in world class, but not to David. And now David's got two belts again, the Texas and the United National title. Now then, on February the 9th, 1984, the United National Champion, Texas Heavyweight Champion, David Von Erich, arrives in Japan for a tour of All Japan Pro Wrestling. He arrives at 4:35 p.m., and he does a press conference in Tokyo, Japan at 7 p.m. February 10th, 1984. David Von Erich, real name David Atkinson, is found dead in a Tokyo hotel room. He is 25 years old. For many years, the official cause of death has been widely reported as acute enteritis. That's an intestinal disorder. However, there's a considerable amount of speculation among journalists, historians, and wrestlers that some type of drug, likely pills of some variety, were involved in the death. Investigations to get clear answers have seemingly been unsuccessful. Some reporters have even requested to see David Von Erich's death certificate, only to be refused. The true cause of death remains unclear. David Von Erich did appear ill in the days before the turn, including appearing on television in visibly poor health. Now, I didn't really see this. I looked at every TV appearance of David Von Erich prior to this, and we'll discuss his last, because believe it or not, his last TV appearance is while he's literally lying in state in Japan in a wooden box, and that's no exaggeration. We'll talk about it. Maybe we'll talk about it. The World Class Championship Wrestling television show stated that he had been injured in Japan. However, that is clearly not true, as David Von Erich died before the tour even began, and he had not wrestled yet. He was scheduled to meet Ashura Hara later that night at Korakuen Hall. So, February 10th, 1984, that day, I think it was sometime around noon, David Von Erich's found dead in his hotel room. They can't get him up, can't make contact with him. The hotel lets Bruiser Brody in. We know he was there, or he claims he was there, probably was there. It leaks out probably because he told Dave Meltzer that he flushed drugs from the dressing room, probably pills. We do not know if that story's true or not. It's been often repeated by Dave. Dave talked regularly with Bruiser Brody. Bruiser Brody is dead. We can only take Dave's word for it. Dave has no reason to lie about this. He's got a otherwise great track record. But we don't know if maybe Brody just said that. We don't know. Probably didn't just say that. But we can't extrapolate directly from that whether pills caused death. Now, he was drinking the night before. Sure, combination of that and pills can, in fact, cause an overdose. We don't know. That's all conjecture. We do not know. We still, to this day, do not know. But 25-year-olds don't just usually fall over dead of natural causes. Now, did he have some sort of underlying health condition? Hey, you know what? As somebody who had a severe intestinal disorder that required surgery and chemotherapy and radiation, all that good stuff, let me tell you, it weakens your body greatly, and pouring pills and alcohol into that otherwise might not have killed you, might could have killed you. Pouring alcohol on top of that might could kill you. We don't know. The fact is, we just don't know. So what happened later that night? This is still the same day in Texas. They found David's body. Well, there's a card going on that night. David was supposed to defend the United National title. Now, we're going to split this narrative into two things. What actually happened with David Von Erich and his death, and what could have happened had David Von Erich not died. So we know if David Von Erich does not die, he's defending the United National title against the Shirahara at Kurakuen Hall, a match he was likely going to win. Shirahara is not on the card that night. The card from All Japan at Kurakuen Hall that night is Hiromichi Fuyaki defeated Toshiaki Kawada. Mach Hayato battled Mitsuo Momoa to a draw. Rocky Hada and Nobuyoshi Sugawara defeated Motishi Okuma and Tarzan Goto. Takashi Ichikawa and Magic Dragon defeated Ultra 7 and Mitsuharu Misawa. Thomas Ivey defeated Shiro Koshinaka. And Thomas Ivey, you all know him better as Coco Ware. Yes, Coco Ware was on this card. He was on this show the night he died. I don't know if anyone's ever asked Coco Ware in an interview. I've never heard it in one of his shoot interviews what he thinks about the death of David Von Erich. But he was certainly there in Japan on this tour wrestling the night David was supposed to wrestle his first match at Korakuen Hall. Alexis Smirnoff defeated Great Kojika. Chavo Guerrero and Jerry Morrow defeated Mighty Inoue and Masanobu Fuchi. Giant Baba and Genichiro Tenryu battled Bruiser Brody and Super Destroyer 2. This is Bill Irwin to a double countout. We've seen in many documentaries and specials Bill Irwin talking about the death of David Von Erich. Yes, he was there. Yes, he was part of the world-class tour. If anybody should know anything, Bruiser Brody, Bill Irwin, and Scott Irwin would have, but Scott Irwin, as we know, died of cancer a year or two after this. And speaking of Scott Irwin, Jumbo Tsuruta defeated him on this night. So Shirahara, now not having an opponent, is not on the card or held off the card. That is that day. Now, what we're told is call is placed to Texas. Of course, considerable time difference there. It's daytime in Japan, nighttime, early morning in America. Call is placed to, I believe, David, is it David Manning? Is that who Jason Call, I believe it is, David Manning. And he goes out and tells Fritz. But David's body is still in Japan. So clearly that day, everybody's just trying to find out information. Clearly that day, they're starting to try to make arrangements to get David's body back to the United States. But David Von Erich's body physically is in Japan at this point. Word starting to get around the United States to friends and family that David has died. It is known now definitely in Japan that that's the case. Had David lived, he would have made a successful defense of the United Nations national title. Now, the next day, the day after the death of David Von Erich, All Japan is in Sawara, Japan. And your matches are Tarzan Goto defeated Toshiaki Kawada. Mach Hayato defeated Nobuyoshi Sugawara. Ultra 7 defeated Mitsuo Momoda. Rocky Hada defeated Hiromichi Fuyuki. Magic Dragon and Masanobu Fuchi defeated Shiro Koshinaka and Mitsuharu Misawa. Thomas Ivey, a.k.a. Coco Ware, defeated Motoshi Okuma. Mighty Inoue and Takashi Ishikawa defeated Chavo Guerrero and Jerry Morrow. Shirahara appears this time. He defeats Alexis Smirnoff by DQ. And in your main event, Giant Baba, Jumbo Tsuruta, and Genichiro Tenryu defeated Bruiser Brody and the Super Destroyer Scott and Bill Irwin. Where would David have been on this show? Likely defending the United National title against one of these undercard guys. Probably against, well, it would have been any number of these undercard guys. You'll see, they're interchangeable. Everything but the main event's largely just names drawn out of a fishbowl, it seems like. Now, the day after David's death, the 11th, still the same day we're talking about now, world-class TV show airs. It's TV day. What's airing on TV? Well, David Von Erich is lying in a wooden box in Tokyo, Japan. But this show had already been taped, and Bill Mercer announces he's got an interview with David Von Erich coming up. About three-fourths of the way through the show, Bill Mercer has a sit-down interview with David and Kerry Von Erich about an attack on Kevin Von Erich by the Freebirds. The main event of the show, as a matter of fact, is David Von Erich, who is substituting for his, quote, injured brother Kevin against Terry Gordy of the Freebirds. David looks good. He's energetic in the match. He does look a little lighter than usual, especially around his waistline. You know, he kind of had a little bit of a skinny fat going on, a little bit of a chub. He seems thinner, but he doesn't really seem sick. He doesn't really seem, he's kind of energetic in the match. No real, no real indicators that there's a major problem, but he does look a little lighter than usual. After the match, David and Mike and Kerry brawl with Michael Hayes, Terry Gordy, and Buddy Roberts. And then at the end of the show, tacked on is a special announcement. Bill Mercer comes on and announces the death of David Von Erich, stating, quote, "After the taping of this program, following a match in Tokyo, Japan, David Von Erich died. He was 25 years old." Well, part of this statement is not true, of course. It was not following a match in Japan. Already the mythology has kicked in. They want it to be as though David died fighting in the ring, you know, went down triumphantly as champion. In fact, he was Texas champion and United National champion, but that is, as we see, not reflective of reality. The next day, David's body is still in Japan. In fact, they have a memorial service for him in Shibuya, Japan, at church. You could even find footage of this on YouTube. He is there displayed in a wooden crate. Bruiser Brody's there. Antonio Inoki, Giant Baba's there. They're putting flowers in the makeshift casket for David. Obviously, they're getting ready to send him back to the United States, but I guess arrangements haven't been made just yet. So they have basically a funeral for him there in Japan. He has two funerals for all intents and purposes. So following that funeral service, All Japan is in Sotogaru, Japan. And your show is Mitsuharu Misawa defeated Toshiaki Kawada. Tarzan Goto defeated Hiromichi Fuyuki. Motoshi Okuma and Great Kojika defeated Nobuyoshi Sugawara and Yoshihiro Momoda. Magic Dragon and Masanobu Fuchi defeated Ultra 7 and Mach Hayato. Mighty Inoue defeated Shiro Koshinaka. Thomas Ivy, Coco Ware, defeated Rocky Hada. Chavo Guerrero defeated Mitsuharu Misawa, but that was a heck of a match. Genichiro Tenryu and Ashura Hara defeated the Super Destroyer, Scott and Bill Irwin. And Bruiser Brody and Alexis Smirnoff and Jerry Morrow defeated Giant Baba and Jumbo Tsuruta and Takashi Ishikawa. If, in our alternate timeline, if David Von Erich's still alive, I think he's in the main event of this show. He's probably taking Alexis Smirnoff's place. Alexis Smirnoff don't really fit in this match. Probably would have been Bruiser Brody, David Von Erich, and Jerry Morrow against Baba Tsuruta. And, well, actually, maybe, you know what? He probably would have been on Baba's team. He probably would have been, let's see here. Actually, maybe not. No, I think he probably would have been with Brody, as a matter of fact, probably on his team. It's hard to say, but I bet he would have been slotted into that main event somewhere. On the 13th, we presume that David's body is en route from Japan back to the United States. Don't know for sure. On the 14th, there is no card for All Japan on the 13th. They have a day off. On the 14th, in Sosu, Japan, your show is Jumbo Tsuruta and Genichiro Tenryu defeated the Super Destroyer 1, Scott Irwin and Bruiser Brody. Giant Baba and Magic Dragon defeated Super Destroyer 2, Bill Irwin and Alexis Smirnoff. See how these are very interchangeable. I mean, very interchangeable matches. They got the Super Destroyers in two different tag team matches. I mean, what does that tell you? Ashura Hara defeated Thomas Ivy, Coco Ware. Chavo Guerrero defeated Shiro Koshinaka. Takashi Ishikawa defeated Jerry Morrow by DQ. Mighty Inoue and Masa Fuchi defeated Mitsuharu Misawa and Ultra 7. Great Kojika and Motoshi Okuma defeated Tarzan Goto and Rocky Hada. Mach Hayato defeated Nobuyoshi Sugawara. And Masamichi Fuyuki defeated Toshiaki Kawada. No telling where David would have been on that that card. Probably in a tag team match, a six-man match, maybe with Saruta and Tenru, teaming with them or teaming with the Super Destroyers against them and somebody, or maybe a defense of the United National title. Who knows? But that's not where he's at, because the next day he is in Denton, Texas, and being buried in Dallas. February the 15th, 1984, David Von Erich, David Atkinson's funeral is held in Denton, Texas, with burial in Dallas, with an enormous crowd on hand and substantial media coverage. But the show went on that night in Takeo, Japan, as David Von Erich is now in his burial plot, flowers on top of his grave, fans in Texas mourning. All Japan, the tour he's supposed to be on as United National Champion, continues with Yoshihiro Momoda defeating Toshiaki Kawada. Mach Hayato defeated Hiromichi Fuyuki. Mitsuharu Misawa defeated Tarzan Goto. Magic Dragon and Masanobu Fuchi defeated Matoshi Okuma and Great Gojika, or battled them rather to a draw. Chavo Guerrero defeated Ultra 7. Alexis Smirnoff and Super Destroyer 1 Scott Irwin defeated Mighty Inoue and Rocky Hada. Genichiro Tenryu defeated Thomas Ivey. Giant Baba and Jumbo Tsuruta and Ashura Hara defeated Bruiser Brody and the Super Destroyer 2, Bill Irwin and Jerry Morrow. And so David would have been on that show somewhere. On the 16th, February 16th, 1984, the All Japan is in Nagasaki, Japan. And the only thing really of note on this show is pretty much your same interchangeable names, but the All Asian tag team titles are filled. They were vacant. Ashura Hara and Takashi Ishikawa defeated Thomas Ivey, Coco Ware, and Jerry Morrow. David would have just been on that show somewhere in a match. February 17th, 1984, in Kakushi, Japan, another interchangeable name card. Your main event is a six-man tag team match. Giant Baba and Genichiro Tenryu and Ashura Hara beat Bruiser Brody and the Super Destroyers. In St. Louis has a show that night with Ric Flair defeating Barry Windham to retain the NWA World title. But David wouldn't have been on that show. He still would have been in Japan. And he's going to be in Japan for the duration of this tour, which runs through February. So February 18th, All Japan's in Terumi, Japan. On the 19th, they're in Sendai, Japan. On the 20th, they're in Hitoshi, Japan. Hideyoshi, Japan. The 21st, they were in Abusuki, Japan. Then the big card is February 23rd, 1984. Now, mind you, David Von Erich should have been on this card, and he was probably going to lose the United National title on this show to Genichiro Tenryu. So this is probably now setting up a challenger in Japan for the future NWA World Heavyweight Champion David Von Erich when Tenryu beats him for the United National title. As we know, that's not what happened. But listen to this card. It's a historic card otherwise, and people forget this. Not only was David supposed to be there, going to lose the United National title, but a world title changes hands. Attendance is 13,500. Ultra 7 defeated Toshiaki Kawada. Great Kojika and Matoshi Okuma defeated Rocky Hada and Yoshi Momoda. Shiro Koshinaka defeated Mitsuharu Misawa. Coco Ware, under the name Thomas Ivey, defeated Tarzan Goto. Masanobu Fuchi and Ashura Hara Magic Dragon battled Super Destroyer 2, Bill Irwin, and Jerry Morrow and Alexis Smirnoff to a no contest. Chavo Guerrero defeated Mighty Inoue. Bruiser Brody and Super Destroyer 1, Scott Irwin, defeated Takashi Ishikawa and Giant Baba. Genichiro Tenryu did, in fact, win the United National title, but it wasn't from David Von Erich. It was from an odd name that was brought in to replace David. So it took them a little while to bring in somebody else on the show, but it's actually a name that was provided by Jim Crockett. They sent in Ricky Steamboat. Yes, Ricky Steamboat loses to Genichiro Tenryu for the vacant United National title. I don't know why it was Steamboat. I think it was no reason. It was just arbitrary. Steamboat was available, and they booked him over there. The tour is only likes about a week being over with at this point in time anyway. So I think he was just a name, a placeholder to bring in, somebody with some name value. But here's your big match. It has ramifications in the United States. Jumbo Tsuruta defeated Nick Bockwinkel to win the AWA World Heavyweight title. The special guest referee, none other than former NWA World Champion Terry Funk. Yes, the AWA World title is not only defended on this All Japan card, but it changes hands. Jumbo Tsuruta will have a several-week run as the AWA World Champion. And so that's pretty interesting. Genichiro Tenryu and Jumbo Tsuruta both being put over pretty big on this particular card. So now David is deceased. If there's David's story's over. As we know, the Von Erichs would go through many more tragedies along the way. All of them except Kevin die. Mike commits suicide. Kerry commits suicide. Chris commits suicide. Eventually, Fritz and Doris both die as well later on. Kevin's the only one left from that era, those people, that family that was involved in wrestling at that time. Now, Kevin's got boys that are involved in wrestling now, but from this era. So now we switch gears to what if David didn't die? So the All Japan Tour continues on. David would have still been on it. He probably would have had a rematch with Genichiro Tenryu that he would have lost a couple times. Again, setting up a challenger for him when he's world champion. He probably then would have been switched to some tag team combinations with Bruiser Brody and the Destroyers, most likely. But on the 24th of February 1984, they're in Kusatsu, Japan. On the 25th, they're in Enon, Japan. And on the 26th, they're in Osaka, Japan. 27th, they're off. The 28th, they are in Toyohashi, Japan. And the 29th, they're in Fuji, Japan. And then on March 1st, they wrap up this tour in Fukuyua, Japan. And that would have ended David's tour. And he would have come back to the United States then in March of 1984. So in March 1984, he comes back. What do you do? Okay, well, he's still Texas champion for whatever that's worth, whenever they want to pull it out. He has, he's obviously dominated Ric Flair a couple times, who's the NWA world champion. Harley Race is the Missouri champion. And even though he's lost to Race last time, they've got a program going. He's got a couple people set up in Japan where he can go. So what does he do? What do you do with David at this point in time? Well, they have a big Fort Worth card on March the 19th. And on that show, the Destroyers are back in town. So they're back from the tour as well. So that just further goes to show that David would have been there back. They don't really have what I would call a great main event. Your main event's a multi-man tag team match. Kerry and Mike team up with Chris Adams and Junkyard Dog and Iceman Parsons against the Super Destroyers, the Missing Link, Kamala, and Jimmy Garvin in an elimination match. So David probably would have been plugged into Mike's place on that particular card, and Mike would have been, as he should have been, if they were going to introduce him, and they already have, in some undercard match, getting a squash win of some sort. On April 2nd, 1984, in Fort Worth, Jimmy Garvin beat Chris Adams to win the American title. Probably David would have defended the Texas title on that show at some point in time. Now, on the 7th of April, 1984, Mid-South has a Superdome show, and Kerry Von Erich's on that show. So now, in the real world, it's already scheduled, this is being written about in The Observer, about the big Texas Stadium show, okay, in memory, the David Von Erich Memorial Parade of Champions, which is going to happen in May. So in the real world, Kerry is now getting the David push because Kerry is winning the world title in May. So they've got him on this Superdome show. Kerry's not going to have the same kind of title reign David would have had. Kerry is not as reliable as David was. Kerry is not been to as many different areas and experienced with as many different people as David was. David would have been on this show, probably. Okay, so where does it come in? Okay, well, Ric Flair is working a lot in Florida right now. He's defending the world title nightly in Florida against Dusty Rhodes, against Barry Windham, Billy Jack, Haynes, even Mike Davis, believe it or not. He's wrestling a lot against, and honestly, this is NWA politics at its best. Dusty Rhodes is being pushed more heavily, really, than even David was, especially in Florida where he's booking, as the guy who is superior to Ric Flair. He's beaten Ric Flair all over the place in Florida. He just ain't winning the world heavyweight title. So we go all the way up now to the next month, May 6, 1984, and you all know what this is. 32,132 people gathered together in Irving, Texas, for the David Von Erich Memorial Parade of Champions. So, yes, it's been 3 months since David died. Would this show, had it taken place as just a Star Wars show or something like that, a Cotton Bowl extravagance, something like that, would there have been an NWA world? Is this where David would have won the belt? I don't think so. There's no real good reason for that to have happened here, I don't think. I could be wrong, and I'll tell you why in a moment. But here's the David Von Erich Memorial Parade of Champions. Kerry Von Erich defeated Ric Flair to win the NWA World title. Kelly Kaniski battled Johnny Mantell to a draw. Junkyard Dog defeated Missing Link by DQ. Iceman Parsons and Buck Zumhoff defeated Super Destroyer Scott and Bill Irwin to win the American Tag Team titles. Fritz, Mike, and Kevin Von Erich defeated the Freebirds, Michael Hayes, Terry Gordy, and Buddy Roberts for the world-class six-man tag team titles. Yes, Michael did not, in fact, leave town for very long. Kamala battled Kabuki to a double DQ. Butch Reed defeated Chick Donovan. Chris Adams and Sunshine defeated Jimmy Garvin and Precious. And so there now we have Kerry as the world champion. So let's switch to timeline number one, the real world. Kerry Von Erich's time as NWA world champion. It's very short, but it's probably more active than you think. The very next day in Fort Worth, Texas, Kerry retains the NWA world title over Terry Gordy. On the 8th of May in Muskogee, Texas, Kerry retains the NWA world title over Terry Gordy again. May the 11th, 1984 in Dallas, Texas, Kerry retains the NWA world title over Ric Flair. May the 12th, 1984 in San Antonio, Texas, NWA world champion Kerry Von Erich beats Ric Flair. Then he travels down for a tour of Florida the next day, May 13th, 1984. NWA World Champion Kerry Von Erich beats Superstar Billy Graham. What a match that is. May the 14th, 1984. NWA World Champion Kerry Von Erich beats Ron Bass by DQ. May the 15th, 84. Kerry Von Erich beats Superstar Graham. On the 16th in Miami Beach, Kerry Von Erich beats Superstar Billy Graham by DQ. On the 17th in Melbourne, Florida, NWA champion Kerry Von Erich beats Black Bart. On the 18th of May 1984 in Lake City, Florida, champion Kerry Von Erich beats superstar Billy Graham. May 19th, 1984, Sarasota, Florida, Kerry Von Erich defeated Ron Bass to retain the world title. Not only that, but he wrestles twice that day down in Tampa at the Sun Dome. He beats Ron Bass again, this time by DQ, to retain the world title. And then, as we know, they go over for another tour of Japan, and that's where the title changes back. May 24th, 1984, in Yokosuka, Japan, Ric Flair beats Kerry Von Erich to regain the NWA World Heavyweight Championship. From there, Ric Flair will hold the belt for a little over the next 2 years, where he has a quick title transition with Dusty Rhodes, then gets it back. Just a couple weeks, Dusty Rhodes holds the belt. And then Ric Flair holds it until he loses it again briefly to Ronnie Garvin in September of 1987. Garvin loses it back to Flair in November, which runs all the way to 1989. So if you take out just less than a month's time, let's see, is that right? Less than a month. Well, no, about less than a little over 2 months' time. Ric Flair was basically the world champion from March 23rd, 1984, until 1989, where he has those swaps with Ricky Steamboat, and then ultimately kind of loses it for a year to Sting. Not hardly a year, but several months to Sting there in 1990. So pretty much the entire latter part of the 1980s was all Ric Flair. Where do you put David Von Erich in there? So David, we've seen him built up. We've seen everything kind of changes in the NWA title picture because of that. Does the question we have to ask is that tour of Japan in May of 1984, was it Ric Flair going to go over there as world champion, or was it going to be David Von Erich go over there as world champion? Or was David going to win the belt there in Japan on that tour? I think either situation is plausible. I would argue probably not win it in Japan. He probably goes, David Von Erich probably goes to Japan as the NWA world champion. I think the title change actually probably takes place in St. Louis, Missouri, and I would think maybe around, probably in May of 84. Now, so you have to say, well, why then wouldn't it have taken place anyway? Why wouldn't David's time would have been May 6, 1984, at some sort of Cotton Bowl show or whatever? Maybe it would have. Maybe that's exactly what would have happened. Maybe that's exactly when David gets the belt. And maybe, quite honestly, instead of doing the Florida run, although David was over big in Florida too, he'd been a heel down there, he does it with, I just think it goes longer than it did with Kerry. Maybe, in fact, David does win it May 6, 1984 at some sort of, Texas Stadium or Cotton Bowl, or probably would have been not been Reunion Arena. It probably would have been some specialty show like this. Maybe he does win it there, or maybe he wins it in St. Louis. And he goes on this tour of all Japan as the NWA World Champion, meeting Tenryu and whomever else they've got that they want to put him up against, depending on how they booked that previous tour. I'm not sure. I'm less nebulous about when David gets the NWA World Title, because I feel like every indicator is somewhere sometime in May of 84. The only reason I'm suspect of it taking place in World Class is the fact that the NWA didn't really like doing that hometown title change and stuff. They like to have the belts change outside the areas. Like they had Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair go to like Kansas City to do it, or had wrestlers go to like Terry Funk go to Canada, and they had them outside their area change the world title rather than doing it there. I would not be surprised if it wasn't some sort of, Ric Flair getting some kind of cheating win over David Von Erich here, where it sets him up as a challenger for David after David very soon in St. Louis then wins the title there. It's hard to say. I think there's no way of knowing, right? Your big St. Louis show was the 11th, was May 11th, 1984. So that would have been almost a week after the Texas show, and your show there doesn't have an NWA title match on it. obviously, because Kerry didn't go there. You could have, I mean, this card really needs something. It actually really does. And listen to this, too. Maybe this is what happens. In fact, maybe it is. I don't know. May 11th, 1984 in St. Louis. This is our alternate, in another timeline somewhere, David might have won the NWA title here. Jimmy Garvin defeated Chris Adams. Okay, that's a world-class match. Harley Race and Stan Hansen defeated Wahoo McDaniel and Barry Windham. Blackjack Lanza defeated Crusher Blackwell in a lumberjack match. Greg Gagne and Jim Brunzell went to a draw with the Grapplers, that being Lynn Denton and Tony Anthony under mask. Dick the Bruiser went to a no contest with Baron Von Raschke. And Ted Oates, Jerry Oates, and Marty Jannetty defeated Roger Kirby, Scott Ferris, and T.G. Stone. That is a show crying out for a main event of some sort. I'm not even sure what match would have headlined that show, quite frankly. Probably Dick the Bruiser and Baron Von Raschke, or Harley Race and Stan Hansen against Wahoo McDaniel, Barry Windham. Any way you look at it, that's not a strong St. Louis card. The next St. Louis card is June 1st, 1984 in St. Louis. Now, Flair's the NWA World Champion again, and they're back from Japan, and Ric Flair goes to a draw with former champion Kerry Von Erich. Headlines that match, and they're back above 5,000. In fact, that May show, I don't even think, drew 5,000. The June show drew a little over 7,000 for Flair against Kerry Von Erich on top for the title. Would that have been a title change? Let's say maybe David has gone to Japan now as NWA World Champion, and he comes back. Do they change the belt back here to Flair in St. Louis? Possibly. I could possibly see that. I suppose it all depends on how much power Jim Crockett continues to gain. He faces Kerry again in August of 84 in St. Louis. Harley Race is still your Missouri champion all the way through this. September of 84 in St. Louis, Ric Flair beats Harley Race. Again, you could have on any of these St. Louis shows have done that, that change, but maybe it's as early as June 1st, 84. And if that's the case, then David's title run doesn't go much longer than Flair's. But in their minds, they're setting Flair up. Yes, Flair's won it, but David will get it back at some point down the line, and maybe he does. Maybe he does, in fact, just like they gave Dusty that quick little turnaround in 1986, maybe David does get it again. It's going to have to be before 1986. The bottom falls out of things. And did David Von Erich's death accelerate any of that? Maybe you can make a little bit of a case that perhaps it could, but the wrestling world change for world class drops out of the NWA by 1986, crowns their own world champion. They're going down here terribly. Now, many would argue it was the rapid succession of deaths from not just the Von Erichs, but Gino Hernandez and others as well. All kinds of problems being exasperated by the Von Erich deaths. The next parade of champions is called the David and Mike Von Erich Parade of Champions, and the dream is over in Texas at that point. When they leave the NWA, it's just irrelevant, really. So is it David Von Erich? Did he change wrestling so much with his death? Possibly. Probably did some. It was more, of course, obviously, the WWF and what it was doing. The answer to the question is, or I should phrase it, if you ask the question, was David Von Erich promised the NWA world title? I think everything my research has bared out is yes, as far as promises go in wrestling. He was certainly, I think, going to be world champion. And it was probably going to be in 1984. So I would say the answer to that question is yes, as far as promises go, he probably was. The plan was probably for David Von Erich to be NWA world champion. Now then, the question is, how long of a title reign would it have been? It wouldn't have been a real long one. David as a babyface champion. Now, mind you, he played heel too, and he was a good heel, especially down in Florida. He probably could have been a heel in Mid-Atlantic, but he was still going to be a babyface in St. Louis, definitely in Texas. They weren't going to go on a multi-year run with David Von Erich. The wrestling world was just changing too much. Ric Flair had already became too valuable in too many different areas, too dependable, too reliable. He lived that life. He looked the role. He was everything they needed the NWA champion to be. David, well, I mean, he's 25 years old. The argument's going to be made he's too young. He's already had this run. Imagine how over he'll be in a few years, not knowing that in a few years down the road, none of this would matter because the NWA would be decimated, WWF would rule the world, and he would probably, you know, have a job as a, you know, the postman, David Von Erich, or, you know, something like that in WWF. Who knows what he would have been, but things would have changed. It's a very interesting, it's certainly a tragedy, one of the biggest tragedies in wrestling history, 25-year-old. We still don't really know a good definitive cause of death for David Von Erich. Lots of speculation. That's not really fair either over these years. All based really on Bruiser Brody saying a dead man who we can't ask, who can't cross-examine, can't get different opinions for, based on him telling a reporter that he flushed pills. And he may have had pills there. That does not necessarily link him. The death certificate's never been publicly shown. And if it is, who knows what it says, because it was done in Japan. Who knows what kind of pressures they were under. Who knows? We don't know, and we'll likely never know, why David Von Erich died at the age of 25. But the saga of David Von Erich and then the NWA World Heavyweight Championship run that wasn't, or the death of David Von Erich, tragedy of wrestling, it's still, all these years later, one of the most intriguing, interesting stories in the history of wrestling. Well, I want to thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this show. I hope you've enjoyed the Saga of series. I don't know how much longer these will last or how long I'll keep them going. Probably as long as I keep thinking of what I think is interesting stories. And I hope you'll spread the word, let people know what we're doing so we can gain some new Patreons. We have, at the time I'm recording this, the most Patreons we've ever had in history. We've set a new record again this month, but we got to keep going. We got to double our Patreons this year, and right now we're on target, but we still have a ways to go, but we're going to do it, and I thank you for it. I thank each and every one of you. Trust me, I am eternally grateful. So thank you so much, and I'll see you here again soon with another show.
If you liked what you heard, go to whenitwascool.com.
This is the sound of the 80s. Everybody's looking for it, and we've got it.
And hit that Patreon button.
If you'll excuse me, I need to go buy a new Cyndi Lauper CD and have myself a little cry.
whenitwascool.com is your source for the best in retro pop culture. When It Was Cool features articles and podcasts on retro TV and movies, toys, action figures, pro wrestling, food, video games, and more. Hit the Patreon button to support us and get instant access to hundreds of premium podcasts and features. Family friendly and fun. WhenItWasCool.com.